It's time for the Kick Around, the Ticket's weekly show all about soccer. 2 hours of HSOs on the clubs, leagues, and tournaments of the world's game. It doesn't matter if you're new to the sport, don't worry. This is the Ticket. We're just kicking it around. Now, here's two guys hoping for short shorts to come back in style. Andy Swift and Peter Welpton.
Buen dia. Oh, that's beautifully done. McGinn! That'll do it for Aston Villa. Surely back-to-back wins for Steven Gerrard to start his reign as Villa boss. A stunning strike from John McGinn.
Hi-de-ho, P1s, and welcome to today's Kick Around. Normally, Saturdays 2 to 4 here on Sport Radio 96.7 and 1310 The Ticket, where you, the good P1, talk soccer and all that implies. And don't forget, you can hear us and see us on our new website, thekickaround.com. Hi, for those new here or unfamiliar, my name is Peter, and with me is my soccer talking BFF. And fantastic chef. At least that's what he says he is. Yeah. The amazing Andy Swift.
Hey, Peter, long time no see, huh, buddy?
It has been a while, man.
Lost a few hairs since I last saw you. I've probably turned a little bit more gray.
No,
it's been a while. I feel like I'm.
It has been a while. So, because college football is king around here and tends to bully us, we've been bumped for a while. And we've had to fill in spots with podcasts. Thanks to Lars, who will be on here in a little bit, for helping out last weekend. And we did U.S. national team coverage.
What'd you think of that goal call selection? Aston Villa goal. Interesting. Because Liverpool scored four today, so I was wondering if one of those would get chosen. But no.
Don't you get bored?
Our friendly Everton producer.
Don't you get bored?
No, but then I was thinking some more, and it's Stevie Gerrard is coaching them.
Oh, that's what it is. His pre-Liverpool warm-up tour?
Yeah, that's awesome.
We do have so much action today to catch up on, and we will. And, of course, we will have on here shortly the amazing Lars Sivertsen, live from London, to help us learn more about the rather unusual news that came up this week. And I mean unusual because I don't think anybody expected Manchester United to ever do anything smart ever again. But alas, look what they've done. They may have found the man to help solve their problems. Ralph.
Ragonk.
Ralph Ragonk.
What I'm going to call him.
And Lars will give us insight into that. Plus, Daniel Robertson will talk about the crime spree that Juve apparently went on and maybe give us a Weston McKennie nightmare update. If you haven't heard, Weston McKennie left the Juve game today in the middle of the game with an apparent knee injury. This is me grasping my pearls and gasping. And then Tyler Kern will join in to talk all things Bundesliga. Look who scored again today in the German league for the kajillionth time.
50 and 50.
We'll catch you up on all kinds of things going on with the European World Cup qualifying. They did make it as difficult as possible to understand.
No, come on. We'll explain it.
But I do want to spend a minute here. I wish we could probably spend an entire segment talking about Thiago's strike earlier this week.
The Champions League game, huh?
That goal
that
Thiago hit.
I'm shocked you're bringing this up.
May have been one of the most beautiful moments of football art I have ever seen.
Especially the angle behind, like from the other goal in slow motion.
The way the physics of it seemed impossible. Just a low, perfect strike, daisy cuttering the ground. It looks like it might touch the ground, but did it? And yet it's still rising.
You know, often when a player strikes the ball so sweetly, so perfectly, you're like, ah, man, that, you know, he got lucky or whatever. He meant to strike it the way he did.
His body, his body shape, his technique is all textbook perfecto. And you know, I mean, he does get a little lucky that it doesn't touch anybody going through.
Sure.
But its flight, and we've retweeted this video several times. You can find it all over the place. If you've not seen the Thiago strike from the midweek game for Liverpool, even I have to admit, it was about as perfect a soccer strike for a goal you will ever see in your life.
Been a little too complimentary of Liverpool lately. I'm a little worried.
I'm definitely up to something.
I'm a little worried.
All right, so we got this little extra space. There's my Thiago strike talk. When we come back, we will start the show in earnest and catch up with some of today's action in the Premier League. Next on the Kick Around. Hey, P1s. It's possible in the next few days you may hear from some child or kid that you're associated with.
Hey, Mommy, I would like a Christian Pulisic Chelsea jersey, or maybe a Walker Zimmerman Nashville SC jersey.
Okay, probably not that last one, but you get my point. It's the season for gift giving, and Soccer90.com has all your great soccer gear, from international club gear to Major League Soccer stuff or U.S. national team gear. Depending on when you're listening to this, they may have one of two different sales going on. Currently, during the MLS playoffs, they got an MLS Cup playoff sale. $10 hats, $15 tees, $55 2020 MLS jerseys, and running through December 3rd. If you're happening to listen on Cyber Monday, 40% off everything, online only. And don't forget to go visit that kick-ass store up in Frisco, next door to the Hall of Fame on Main Street. Soccer90.com, your source for all the best soccer gear gift ideas. As previously mentioned, but in case you missed it, Lars Siverston will join us here in just mere moments to talk all about the big news this week of Ralph Ragonk, as Andy calls him, being assigned as interim manager for Manchester United and then the consultancy that will follow after that. That's big news.
So many questions.
For us, yes. And Lars will help answer those for you, Andy.
Thank you.
So before we get into that, as I was saying in the opening kind of teaser segment, you know, since the last time we did a live show, we've been through another World Cup qualifying cycle with the United States and a lot of other things. We did a couple of podcasts about that. By the way, if you haven't listened to the podcast version of the show, it's available on our website, thekickaround.com, or wherever you get your podcasts. Sometimes when we're not able to do the show on the air, we flip over there. And after each of those games, we did I thought fun little conversations and kind of instant reactions, knee-jerk reactions to those games. We have friends join in, and it's a good time. And now we're in this weird situation where there are six games left for the men's national team to decide whether or not they're going to qualify for Qatar. And we got a really important piece of news yesterday.
Yes.
Which is how that – because first through third automatically go to Qatar.
Right.
But fourth – there was a bit of mystery as to what how that path would go.
Right, because the fourth place team would have to play a one-game playoff against either the fifth place team from South America or the winner of the Oceania Confederation, which is basically New Zealand.
Australia.
Australia's
anymore.
In Asia.
That's
so it's
right.
Really New Zealand. Or the Asian fifth place or something, which is likely somebody like Australia or perhaps Saudi Arabia. You definitely did not want to draw South America, because that could be Peru or Chile or Colombia, you know, Uruguay, tough team. Asia is a bit of a wild card. And usually you get a pretty decent team out of Asia. What you wanted to draw was the, quote, champion, the first place team from Oceania, which is likely going to be New Zealand.
Right.
And lo and behold, CONCACAF drew Oceania.
Now, when did the draw take place?
Friday, yesterday.
Okay. So whoever ends up fourth will end up playing likely New Zealand, but whoever. Okay, so that works out. So and then the winner of that game qualifies for the World Cup.
Right, and it's a one-game playoff.
Where will it be played?
The rumor is that it will be played in Qatar. Maybe it's official now. Between yesterday and today, they've officialized that. They just want to test out some of the infrastructure in Qatar. And then the South American team will play the fifth place team from Asia.
Yeah, and the other thing that has been solidified since then is that in the next qualifying window, which happens the end of January and the very beginning of February, it's three games.
Well, let's do a snapshot of where CONCACAF is right now in terms of the standings. So we'll start with first place, Canada.
I know.
Second place, the U.S.
Look at him gloat.
Third place, Mexico. No, I say that I'm saying I'm being half funny. It's shocking that Canada is in first, this deep in the qualifying stage. The U.S. is second, and that, I think, is also, it's not shocking, but I think it alleviates a lot of the fears we had heading into this qualifying cycle, right?
Okay, right.
That they would just take another dump and they wouldn't make it to this World Cup. And I think we are pretty secure now in that they're in good shape to qualify, albeit not altogether there, and we have to play the games, but they're in really good shape right now. And then Mexico's in third, Panama fourth.
So it won't surprise you to find out, Andy, that I have been drawing some graphs.
Yes, you're the graph guy now.
You know I like to
do
little
color
charts.
Graphs.
Well,
yes.
It's because it helps me see things. It helps me understand scenarios when I see them visually. So I have been quietly building a spreadsheet of the remaining six games for the CONCACAF games, right? And trying to match out who has what games left and predict how it'll go. Now, I'm still working on the prediction part of it.
Okay, well, did you send those out, by the way?
The only one that I shared is the one that just clearly shows the schedule. It doesn't, the color one that shows my predictions, I'm still working on.
Okay, because I saw the one that you shared then.
Right.
Yeah. But I think you're about to make a good point.
So the point is this, is that there are national teams that have been playing very well that now suddenly have very, very difficult schedules. And then there are some that have not been playing well that now suddenly have what appear to be the easiest of the schedules. And I think there is an argument to be made that Jamaica is going to go from starting really poorly in this qualification process and find themselves in the fourth place spot by the time this is all over.
Okay, I don't entirely agree with your prediction that they will jump all the way to fourth, but I do agree that some teams their schedule is very beneficial to their ultimate total point total.
Well, everybody thinks Mexico is in trouble, but Mexico has a very favorable schedule.
Right, and that's
out.
The one where I agree with you.
Yeah.
The point that you had made to me off air was that their schedule is very favorable here.
I am leaning towards predicting that Mexico is going to end up winning the group.
I would not be surprised. It's very tight. Look, Canada 16 points, U.S. 15, Mexico 14.
Just so you know, Mexico only has two road games left out of the six games. At Jamaica, which is their first game, and then at Honduras. They have Costa Rica, Panama, the U.S., and El Salvador as the rest of their other games, which are all at home.
Yeah.
And Mexico traditionally is pretty dominant. Only Canada's really kind of breached that recently.
Yep.
And by the time the U.S. gets to that game, depending on how the U.S.'s the next three games go, could really, really kind of almost make that game moot in many ways.
And the U.S.'s schedule is not super hard and it's not super easy. It's just middle of the road,
Well, that's the other piece of news that we got this week, which was now we know where the venues for the next three games are. So the El Salvador game will be played is this
at home, right?
They're both, the El Salvador game is at home. I think this one is in Columbus.
Correct.
Then Canada has announced that game will be played at Hamilton at Tim Hortons Park, which is exactly where they just beat Mexico.
No, that was in Edmonton.
Oh, that was Edmonton.
Yeah.
That wasn't Hamilton?
No, Hamilton is close to Toronto. So the reasoning behind this is Canada has an away game. You fly easier into Toronto.
Right.
But Toronto has a grass field. So Hamilton is very close to Toronto. Just a little bit farther south.
No, I know where Hamilton
is. Yeah, okay, yeah. So this is an AstroTurf field.
And so they're doing that because they want them to play on turf.
In case there's snow. Yeah, and if there's snow and it just,
okay.
They're not going to take
the
U.S.
Field. But that's a heated field at Toronto Stadium.
It's not an advantage to take the U.S. to. I mean, the U.S. is playing in Columbus and Minnesota. You know, I mean, the U.S. is actually flying north after that game.
Yeah.
To Minnesota.
All right. So the third game, as Andy alluded to, is against Honduras, and they've decided to play that in Minnesota.
Yeah. So that is going to be awesome to watch.
And I do
right?
wonder if the U.S. is almost trying to outthink themselves here by playing three games in extreme cold climate.
Well, yeah. They don't have the choice in the second one, but by playing the other two, that's what they're doing, right?
Man, I just don't know. I hope that doesn't blow up in their face.
So there's an argument to be made that that when you're the better team, you want to erase the elements. You just want to outplay the other team, right? And the U.S. is a better team than Honduras presently. But you're trying to, psychologically, impact them with the cold weather, I suppose. But that could hurt you. You got to be really careful about those things.
Yeah. These final six games are really going to come down to it. And I promise to share my complete predicted spreadsheet when I'm ready to do it. Because I'm glad I didn't put it out early. Because as we alluded to earlier, something weird could happen. Like the news today that Weston McKennie may be injured now. And we don't know what that means.
Yeah.
that could be a really severe, he's out maybe even before the World Cup kind of deal. We don't know yet, so hopefully Daniel will have some news on that.
And we're going to talk, too, the draw also affected who would play who in the European playoffs, and we're going to talk about results later.
All that, because UEFA has completely wonked up how you qualify for the World Cup out of that confederation. That's crazy. All right. When we come back, we will get Lars live on from London to talk all about Manchester United's new hire next here on The Kick Around. Welcome back. It is The Kick Around, late night Kick Around, since we got started late, unfortunately. All right, so due to a technical problem, we'll have Lars on here in just a few minutes. We're going to make a shift in our programming schedule. We'll push Lars back to another segment. Because we got to get all that internet connective wonktivity all worked out. And instead, let's talk about today's results. Because while none of the games, Andy, I think you would agree, were amazing, there were some interesting storylines that continue to grow. And let's just get it out of the way. Liverpool is kicking everybody's ass and playing beautiful soccer once again.
No, look, you're a United fan, and you're supposed to hate Liverpool, but you have to admire what they're doing now, right? I mean, the way they're playing, it's really, I don't want to call it pretty soccer, but it's the jogo bonito that, you know, the Brazilians came up with term. It really is nice to watch.
It's pretty.
And the way they work angles and passing lanes, I think they do that better than anyone in the Premier League currently. It's maybe City at one point a couple years ago was that good at that.
Here's what is different between the wonkiness of Liverpool last year and this year. It comes in three forms to me. One, Diego Jota is healthy and playing again. Mm-hmm. Fantastic signing last year that just got hurt and kind of was a missing piece. He's an excellent fill-in for one of the regular three aren't available. Mm-hmm. Firmino's hurt now, right? The second part to me is that because you've got your center back things figured all out, now you can put whatever center mids you want in there, and you've got a fine selection to choose from. Mm-hmm. But really, more importantly than anything else, is the fact that Trent Alexander-Arnold is playing back to form and playing that very important part of the attack that was missing from his game. And Robinson, too. Both of your fullbacks. Yeah. And even the Tamikas guy that you guys signed, the Turkish player.
He's been really good. Yeah.
Not as good as Robinson. Those are the three elements to me that look very, very different from last season.
Yeah. Last season's issue was that all those three elements were a thing. And this year, they've all seemed to be fixed. Right? So two of the three things, you know, team wouldn't have been as bad. But with all those three things now fixed, apparently, visually, I think this team is playing as well as it was 2 years ago.
Yeah, so they had Southampton at Anfield today, and, you know,
this is a game they never got out of second gear.
I mean, here's the thing. It was frustrating because for Southampton, they completely changed their you know, formation to try to help cover up what they thought was going to be an onslaught. And they didn't look comfortable playing with three in the back. They didn't play well with three in the back. It took just a matter of minutes for Liverpool to score. I'm not sure if I like those away kits. They look too much like something out of a video game. I don't know. It's
funny.
Very strange.
I don't watch Southampton a lot, but I guess the three in the back was something new. For this game, and they looked very confused.
Very out of sorts.
Yeah.
Yes.
In the second half, they switched it back to a back four, right? And then
I stopped watching. Yeah.
Ugh, Peter. Anyway, they looked much better in the second half.
Here's I shared this earlier. So I started watching, and when Jota scored 2 or 3 minutes into the game, whatever it was, I thought, okay, this is over. So I had access to all three games, right?
Sure.
Just like everybody here in the United States. Yes. You could watch Liverpool. You could watch. Mm-hmm. I ended up watching Norwich. And Wolves.
Because of Sargent?
One, because I really want Norwich to play well. I have a weird little affinity for that club.
You're rooting for
Josh
them.
Sargent got the start, and I'm interested.
Out in the wing, right?
And I'm also, to be honest, interested in what's going on with Wolves. Wolves has been playing very, very well lately.
It's interesting you bring them up, because I was just looking at the table. They're in sixth place right now, despite that tie today.
Yes.
The draw.
Now, I would say, and I'm kind of getting out of order how I wanted to do this, because Norwich City hosted Wolves. They had several little chances here and there. Mm-hmm. I thought Norwich City, simply outworked Wolves in this game. Hmm. Wolves clearly look like the more dangerous team. But Norwich looked like the more desperate team and worked mm-hmm. harder, and I think that is how they kind of nullified Wolves a little bit. That game ended up 0-0, but it was an interesting game. It wasn't a dull, boring game. It did have reasons to be interested.
Norwich is in a little bit of a run right here, like, right? A small, albeit well, still modest, but three game unbeaten, or is it two game unbeaten?
Dean Smith has come on. They've won two games, and they're undefeated in their last three.
Three, yeah.
Which has really helped them in terms of the table. That's a huge flip for them.
Sure.
Because the other game that I watched today, I did watch, was Brighton hosting Leeds. Now, that game also ended at 0-0, but it was I thought it was an entertaining game. I did like watching this game.
It was entertaining because Brighton was fun to watch. Leeds was a disaster, at least in that first half. Second half, they improved a little bit, but I'm worried about Leeds. And we can talk about Leeds here just a little bit because Brighton deserves the talk of this. I mean, right? I mean, they look good. Brighton looks good.
Brighton is in a weird place, though, because Brighton now have not won a game in their last, I think it's eight games. I think they're 0-2-4.
Yeah, but what is part of that problem? They're not finishing, and that was the issue last
year.
That
is where this is coming back in, because Mape misses open opportunity, bangs it over the goal. I think I saw them hit the woodwork again two or three times. All of that inability to that finishing, which was a huge problem for them last season, and then it kind of looked like they got it solved, is back. It's really bad. But there's so much to like about Brighton. Go ahead. What were you going to say?
I was going to ask you then on Leeds. Are you worried about Leeds?
I have been worried about Leeds.
What is going on?
Well,
there?
I think they're missing Bamford quite a bit. Calvin Phillips clearly doesn't look like he's healthy 100%.
It just seems like even with those the players out issue, it just doesn't seem they're playing the style of football, soccer, that we or Bielsa wants them to play or plans on them playing. And so there's bigger issues there, perhaps.
I do wonder if it's the quality of player. I mean, they don't have a giant squad. And they do play very well when they've got all their guys, but they haven't had all their guys. They've been missing two, three, four, five different guys over the course of the last several weeks. And it's got them in a bad place. I mean, they've only won once in their last five games. Mm. And you know, on the road at Brighton wasn't going to be easy. Really, and you know, because I'm a nerd like this, my biggest problem was with the kits they wore today.
Mm.
People are punching their radio.
And, too close to the other team kits?
Well, you know, Leeds doesn't... I think leagues should enforce a rule that says you need to make sure that within your own options of kits, there are contrasting colors.
The Premier League needs to enforce that?
Any league.
Yes, because, and you know who else? You just hit a hot spot with me. International, national teams also need to do that. I can't tell you how many times, I have a game.
Right.
A qualifier. Or even a club team in the CONCACAF area, like a Champions CONCACAF League team. And we go to the third kit because the first two don't contrast well with... And the third kit does not work.
So let me explain what we're talking about. Brighton is wearing their home blue and white stripe with blue shorts. The options for... Now, Leeds' home kit is white, so they're not going to wear that because that's not enough of a contrast. Mm-hmm. Their second kit is essentially the same color blue as Brighton's blue. And so you'd think, oh, they've got like a yellow kit or a red kit or an orange kit, third kit. Nope. It's periwinkle,
right,
which is kind of like a light purple. And when you watch the game today, it was weird because it wasn't a terrible problem, but it wasn't contrasting enough.
Right.
And that it was very distracting on television.
What you are trying to say is if your second kit is not drastically different than your first kit, your third kit needs to be that.
Yes.
Right.
Yeah.
Exactly.
I agree.
Yes.
Yes. And that was the big beef there. Boy, we are
you
nerding
from,
out.
You from a fan Kit perspective.
Talk with
me from
Andy.
Yeah.
Oh, I never thought that would happen. So Brighton and Leeds also ended up 0-0. Norwich and Wolves also at 0-0. I would just say, if you're adverse to the donut games, those were two decent ones to watch. They weren't as bad as they sound on paper. Now, the other big game of the day and a team that we just quietly need to continue to pay attention to because things are looking up for the Gunners as Arsenal wins again today 2-0 over lowly Newcastle. Andy, Arsenal is now 7-1-2. 7 wins, 1 loss, 2 draws in their last 10 games. And in the form table, they're third behind Chelsea and Man City, and they are climbing, and they're climbing quickly. Now,
they're fifth overall. I mean, right now, not even in recent form. They're fifth, period.
They are fifth.
And they cannot be caught this weekend. So they will be in fifth heading into the next fixture round.
Now, we will point out that when the measuring cup game of last week against Liverpool came up, they got pummeled 4-0. But in this run, they beat Newcastle, they beat Watford, so who cares? But they also got a win against Leicester, Aston Villa, and even they got the draws against Crystal Palace and Brighton, and they also beat Tottenham. So
and today was, you know, you play a team like Newcastle who's struggling, who's in the relegation zone. If you're a good team, you take care of business, and that's what they did today. And they should have been up 2 goals by halftime, right? Did you watch the game? I mean,
I did. Yeah. I got up early and watched it. Saka did leave the game with a muscle injury. They don't know how bad he is. Just look, they continue to look really good. Odegaard started today. I love that midfield with Odegaard and Partey together. I think that's
it's looking good.
They tend to motor really, really well.
Yeah. Because that was the issue for Arsenal for a long time. It was.
But I got to ask you a question. So Aubameyang, by the way, missed a sitter, banged one off the post from literally like a foot out.
Yeah,
it was. But after that happened, there was a stoppage in play, and the camera closed in very close of a close-up face-up shot of Aubameyang's face, and he kind of had his mouth open. Is Aubameyang a vampire?
Oh, I didn't see it.
Have you not seen this? I tweeted this video out at the Kick Around. I am telling you that either he has a natural tooth condition where his teeth grew like this, or he has undergone some sort of body modification. Because if you watch not just the image, but the whole, like, it's a good 10 seconds of video because he opens his mouth. It's not just the two lower ones. It appears the two upper ones are also longer and sharper than the rest of his teeth. Are you looking at it?
I am.
Watch it.
Yeah. You're rude.
Am I wrong?
You're a rude person.
Why am I rude?
I don't know.
What is that? Does he not have fangs?
Yeah, but the vampires don't have fangs in the bottom teeth, only the top.
Yeah, they do.
They do? I don't think so. Let's look that up.
I think vampires have
bottom
fangs.
Teeth?
Yeah.
I don't think so.
No?
I think it's only the top teeth.
Well, maybe he's a special kind of vampire.
Oh,
with
no,
an underbite?
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, they have fangs in the bottom, too.
Thank you.
Wow.
All right, so I'm going to ask my original question. Is Aubameyang a vampire?
We don't know, but perhaps it's something to look into.
The video at least gives me a legitimate reason to ask the question.
Okay, all right.
Well, am I rude?
Well, you know, you've said more rude things, but...
Newcastle... Yeah, Arsenal beats Newcastle today. The Eddie Howe experiment is not going very well.
This is his first game fully in charge because he missed the last one because of COVID. Newcastle is dead last. They're going to buy a ton of players, right? They have no wins.
They have no wins. They have 6 points, okay?
I picked them.
They are
relegated.
6 points out from not being relegated. If they continue this, like, look, I get it. January can come here, and the Saudis could come in and truckload
this
a whole bunch of players.
This is the storyline here. This is what to watch. This is the intrigue. The Saudis, like a nation state, has just bought this team. Not just a nation state, a very rich nation state. Will they keep them up, or will they going to have to like deal with them in championship?
I got asked on Twitter, what is the potential for Newcastle? And what I would say is this, between its history, its brand, and the fact now that they have access to more money than any club in the world because of their ownership by the state of Saudi Arabia.
They will be a power.
They have potential to become an absolute monster on the global stage.
More
so. But it comes down to the decision makers, how they spend the money and the players they get. That's really all it comes down to.
When City was bought, they didn't have the brand and the history that Newcastle has.
Exactly right.
They could overtake what City has become.
Newcastle is a brand that non-soccer fans already know because they've seen the black and white stripes from way back when. Somewhere along the way, they've seen the Newcastle jersey or whatever. They've seen it. They know what it is.
Plus the beer.
Absolutely. The other game today was actually a really good one, too. Aston Villa at Crystal Palace, Selhurst Park. Steven Gerrard's warm-up tour. Is going very, very well at Aston Villa.
Two games, two wins, buddy.
Yeah, and he's taken them from being near the, just scraping near the bottom to right up towards mid-table with 16 points now. The John McGinn goal today, that whole sequence for that second Aston Villa goal today, every component of it was about as nice as you will ever see. The finish itself, everything was really good. Patrick Vieira is just fine at Crystal Palace, and I thought he was very brave to take off Mihailovic. And put on Eze, who is coming back from an Achilles injury. Eze is a fantastic player. Crystal Palace will be just fine, everybody. I really am. I'm like everybody. I'm shocked at how good Vieira is doing at Palace. But today was a little bit of a stumbling block. Okay, those are the results in the Premier League today. When we come back, we're going to attempt one more time. I think we've got it. Lars live from London to talk all about Ralph and United next year on the Kick Around. I enjoy your enthusiasm in that read, sir.
Well, thank you.
Welcome back to the Kick Around Saturdays, normally 2 to 4. Today we're running a little late due to Ohio State and Michigan. Real quickly, I love to engage the P1s, so if you're into Twitter, go log on to Twitter and check out our Twitter account, because we just posted what I think is a fascinating chart done by our good friend Dan Crook, our the one English guy we actually know that lives here in the Dallas area, personally. Well, I guess I know more than one. But anyway, Dan took the time to build a take a map of all of the London area Premier League, EFL clubs, and the six professional clubs that play non-league football, meaning they're in divisions lower than League Two, and overlay that on a map of the Dallas-Fort Worth area. It is fascinating to look at because you get to figure out based on where you live in your neighborhood what club you'd support. And it's a stunning number of professional teams.
But if I go to, like, let's say I live in Frisco, Plano, or McKinney, I'd have no team to root for.
Well, you could be...
There's a big hole right there.
There's Tottenham. You could go down to Richardson, where Tottenham would be, you know, associated. The reason why I find this fascinating is because of the idea that here we have one football team, the Cowboys. But in soccer, in London, just in London.
London alone.
Look at all of these teams you could pick from, and and many of them are playing in the Premier League. Arsenal, Tottenham, West Ham. Yeah. Chelsea, Brentford, it's Watford. It's,
right.
It is really interesting to see. It's just so different.
I think if you compare it to football, you'd have to add the NCAA Division One football teams, colleges in the area. In terms of, but still, it's a lot more than.
All right. Live via the miracle of the internet, because I also sent him this image. I'm interested in his reaction when he sees this, is our good friend Lars Sivertsen. Hello, Lars.
Hey, everyone. It's working.
It's working. Turn up Lars. You there, Lars?
Okay.
There
you are. Have I been turned up?
Yeah, now you're going.
Maybe you were just talking softly.
Did you
I'm slightly taken aback by this map. It's I will say that my first thing that I notice is, oh my, the sort of size of the urban sprawl around your town. Like, in Luton... The distance from up to Luton, and you're still kind of like Denton, it's called up there, I guess.
Yeah.
You know, that's outside of town here, and I consider London to be unreasonably big.
Oh, yeah. No, Dallas-Fort Worth is immense. Just to put it in perspective for you, Lars, I don't know if everybody knows this stupid fact that I learned many years ago. The landmass of the DFW International Airport, the land that makes up that airport, is essentially the same size as the island of Manhattan.
Yikes. Yeah, you do big airports over in your country. I've noticed.
Well, no,
I've
but ours is particularly...
Times.
Yeah.
I once changed a flight in Denver, and that felt like the airport could be its own country.
Yeah, Denver's a big one, too. Lars, thanks, sir. Thanks for doing the podcast last week. That was fun. I appreciate you taking the time to do that.
It was cathartic. I had some things to say.
You did. And I thought, oh, good, I can give Lars a break. I don't have to ask him to suck up his time. And then we got the news that Manchester United appears on the precipice of making an announcement that they have hired Ralph Rangnick to take over as interim coach of Manchester United. And that has caused quite the stir over in England, hasn't it?
Well, yeah, it's a big story, and I want to just start by saying this is the day that I did not think would come. It's the day that you did not think would come. It's the day when the Man United front office has done something I kind of like. I'm pretty positive about this. I think this. They think this is a pretty good idea. That seemed like something that might never happen. And Ralf Rangnick is a departure for them because he's sort of like a. He's a big brain thinker about football, a sort of an expert tactician, and it's a huge departure from the sort of vibes and nostalgia regime of Ole Gunnar Solskjaer. But I think this is good. I like this.
Why don't you tell everybody, if you could, just briefly give them a background of who Ralf is and his significance in football, modern football.
Okay, so he is often referred to as sort of the godfather of gegenpressing, or even just the godfather of modern German football in general. And there are two strands to that. The first is theoretical. He's someone who was very early in coming out and saying that sort of high tempo, high pressing, sort of zonal coverage thing that is now completely standard at top level football. He was very early in saying this is the football in the future. He famously went on national TV in Germany in 1998 when he was coaching a tiny club in the second division and said, you know, this back four is the way to go and sort of zonal pressing is the way to go, back in a time where Germany were still playing with a sweeper and man marking and this sort of thing. So he made a lot of people think by doing things differently and being quite successful doing things differently. So he's, I guess you could call it almost like a thought leader in German football the last couple of decades. Secondly, he is a godfather figure because the list of coaches that has either worked directly under him or been very inspired by him and then gone on to do great things is extraordinary. It's kind of like, I guess, Bielsa-esque, you'd almost say, but almost more so. Like Thomas Tuchel, Julian Nagelsmann, Marco Rose are people who've worked under him, you know, the current coaches of Chelsea, Bayern Munich, and Dortmund. Jürgen Klopp hasn't worked directly with them, but they were kind of in the same sphere, and Jürgen Klopp sees him as... he's called him the best German coach out there, full stop. And you can see from the way Klopp's play football always that there's been a lot of crossover in the ways of thinking there. So he's both someone who, yeah, like I said, a thought leader, but someone who's also inspired a lot of the very prominent managers around. And he's also been quite successful as a coach in his own right.
So I think the reason why everybody's surprised is this fundamentally changes how Manchester United has typically gone about the business of hiring a manager, and in many ways what they've been going through kind of dates back to the post-Busby era where they were kind of a mess until they hired Sir Alex. But what this thing interesting is that he's the interim for 6 months for the rest of the season, but then he becomes a consultant, which I think most people find the most important part of this deal.
Yes. So what I'm thinking about it is, basically, if you're Man United, you have a club that generates an extraordinary amount of money, so you have money, you have a lot of good players, even if your squad's a bit uneven, but there's a lot to work with there. But what you don't have is maybe a clear sporting direction in terms of what your tactics should be and how the team should play and what your identity should be. And there's also question mark whether the people working behind the scene and stuff like analysis, sports nutrition, sports science, are really top of the line anymore. I mean, I refer you back to the unfortunate... Lukaku incident, who moved to Italy and they immediately found he had a digestive problem, which somehow United hadn't picked up. So basically United have a lot of things going for them, but they're a club in need of modernization and a direction. And I can't think of a more obviously qualified man to give them that than Ralf Rangnick, because his great strength isn't necessarily or hasn't always been as a first team coach, but he's someone who builds clubs. He built off Hoffenheim from the ground up effectively in Germany, and then he went and repeated the trick by being the sporting architect, in a sense, behind the entire Red Bull project. So RB Leipzig in Germany and RB Salzburg in Austria, he effectively built up from nothing. So if Man United are looking at this like, hey, our great big club is a bit broken, we need someone to come in and fix all our things and give us the direction, then Ralf Rangnick is great. And I'm hoping that's what they're doing here. I guess what you worry about is that Man United are still Man United, and if a sort of bespectacled German nerd, to use that word, comes into the building and certainly tells them everything they're doing is wrong, will they actually listen? I mean, are they prepared to sort of throw out some of the things they consider to be the Man United way and go in a different direction? That is a big question mark that we don't really know the answer to. I'm hoping that they understand what a resource this guy is and want to tap into this, but there's no guarantee that that's what they're actually thinking.
All right, we're talking to Lars Siverston live from London about the Manchester United hire of Ralf Rangnick.
Lars, I think for those non-Man United supporters, this is a feared moment for us that yeah. Man United finally did something like this. And I think long-term, this is bad news for us. But in the short term, I mean, there's going to have to be a little bit of have to prove myself to this, right? Even though he has his trajectory, especially with what you said with Hoffenheim and Leipzig and how he turned those... not turned him around, but just brought him up. Imagine now with money what he's going to do. But in the short term, you do have issues at Man United, starting with the number one issue, right? The guy that is the anti-press guy, yeah. and that's Ronaldo. What is going to happen with him?
You're exactly right, and that is a super interesting dynamic to follow in the months going forward, because Ralf Rangnick, football-wise, is all about the collective, all about everyone pressing together in an organized and coherent way, all about everyone running, and at Hoffenheim and Leipzig, the two clubs where he's been the most successful, he would almost exclusively bring in young players. You know, young players under 23, ideally not famous at all, like players with very little ego who you could shape and mold and turn into what he needed them to be for the system. He's never worked with anyone even remotely like Cristiano Ronaldo with his unique abilities, because we're not just dissing him here. I mean, he's still a unique finisher and all this, but he also has certain shortcomings. He's 36. He doesn't press much. He doesn't do the things that Rangnick usually wants a striker to do. And how he will handle someone with his personality and stature, again, Rangnick hasn't really done that before. So that is a big, big elephant in the room right now.
All right, so moving forward, if he's going to be the interim manager through the end of the season, and let's just say he, you know, keeps this thing cruising along and they end up finishing top four and he, you know, makes changes, everybody's feeling the vibe, it's good. Who is, I think, the most likely candidates to take the job full-time are obviously Pochettino, but also Ten Hag, the guy at Ajax, who probably maybe in a Rangnick system is probably a better fit. No, am I wrong about that?
I mean, I think they're both kind of footballing-wise vaguely competitive. I think the big issue would be if your idea is to keep around Rangnick as a consultant, as a director of football, whatever title you want to give him, but as the big brain behind the scenes still, which is what I think they should do, and presumably what, I mean, it would be weird to bring him in if that wasn't the plan. Pochettino is a guy who wants to be in charge. Pochettino, again, does not want a German guy above him telling him who to sign. You know, that's the kind of thing he's getting really annoyed with at PSG, that he can't do things the way he wants. So you wonder if that could be an issue, and maybe Ten Hag would make more sense in that setting, certainly.
Do you think that him coming in now signals that they'll make any particular roster changes in the January window?
I think no matter who's in charge, they would have to look at that midfield. I mean, because that has, you know, we know in inverted commas, it's been very reported from very credible sources, put it that way, that Ole Gunnar Solskjaer really wanted a defensive midfielder this summer, which is a relief to hear, because it means he's smart. There's something
it's
going
not
on
brain
upstairs
dead.
Anyway. Exactly right. The word is he wanted a defensive midfielder and he wasn't 100% sold on Ronaldo. So maybe he deserves some sympathy for the way things unraveled this autumn. But yeah, they have to look at that midfield no matter what, I think.
Yeah, it's funny to think that the reality is under Rangnick, their best, most likely best fit front three is Sancho on the right, Jesse Lingard on the left, and Cavani in the middle. Right?
Yeah. I mean, I hear listeners chuckling at their radio at the moment, but no, I think that might be it. And I think what's worth saying is that, I mean, Sancho and Rashford and Greenwood aren't really pressing machines either, as much as we focus on Ronaldo's shortcomings in that department. But the thing is, they're young, fit men who maybe you could push into doing it. You can say, listen, guys, look at what the team is. Look at what's happening. You're going to have to buck up your ideas and run a lot more than you're used to, and they can probably do it. With Cristiano Ronaldo, even if he wanted to, I don't think you want a 36-year-old center forward to do it anyway.
Yeah, with those young guys, they just haven't been coached properly in that regard. I think they could be coached into that. And speaking of that, so what if he does really, 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 really well? What if he turns this thing around?
Could he stay on as coach?
Could he stay on in 6 months?
I suspect he would prefer then still to step back, but then that will have maybe solidified his position and say, hey, you wanted me in this sort of vague consultancy role, but here, I've proved my mettle, so just give me a straight up like normal director of football role. Let me pick the head coach and let me run this thing for the next few years.
Yeah, interesting.
Again, in my head, that's the thing that makes the most sense here. Of course, it's a harder thing to do if it doesn't go well in this half season, but I think that would be the direction to go in.
Well, as stated by good P1 and our good friend Jono, who's also a hardcore Liverpool fan, I don't understand. This doesn't make any sense. I said back to him, I understand, yes, Manchester United making good business decisions is confusing for all of us. But it does.
It is very confusing for all of them. I'm just not ruling out the possibility of them somehow getting in their own way and sort of putting barriers. And because, again, with Rangnick, he's been successful at clubs where he's had a blank sheet of paper in front of him and just do whatever you want.
And he's also a guy that isn't afraid to go, look, this isn't working out, I'm going to go find something else to do and just bail on you.
No, the reason he ultimately resigned from Hoffenheim, which he had built up from the third tier actually and to a mid-table team in the Bundesliga, was that the club sold a midfielder he wanted to keep. You know, they sold their best midfielder to Bayern Munich, and he was like, "All right, I'm off." so he has that in him. Yeah. So again, very interesting to see how this pans out.
All right, that's the great Lars Siverston live from London. Lars, thanks again. It's always great to have you on. Thanks for the insight on the big news.
Anytime, gentlemen.
Thanks, Lars.
All right. When we come back, we should speak a little German with our friend Tyler Kern next here on The Kick Around. If you haven't seen it, go over Twitter and check out the map of London area teams overlaid over the DFW area map. That seems to be something people are enjoying checking out over on Twitter at The Kick Around. All right, let's pick up the phone, the Buyer's Barricade Ticket Hotline, and find ourselves the good Tyler Kern live here on The Kick Around. Guten Tag, Tyler.
Guten Tag. And happy Thanksgiving, boys.
Yes, happy Thanksgiving to you. Do Germans... No, I guess they don't any sort of Thanksgiving celebration, do they? They should. It sounds like something
really
Germans would do. I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah, not sure about the turkey population in Germany. You know, what they might eat. Probably a lot
ham.
Of
ham. Or
Wienerschnitzel.
Brustwurst, whatever they're
Bratwurst.
Called. Bratwurst, thank you. Good Lord.
Vice
my
first.
Thank you. Hey, Tyler, I saw a stunning statistic today that I knew was, I actually knew it to some degree, but was shocked when I saw it in writing, which is the return of Erling Haaland to Dortmund, where he scored almost immediately, and now that puts him on 50 goals in 50 Bundesliga games.
Tyler, is that good?
That sounds quite good to me, Andy. It's a great question, but yes, quite good.
Good question, Andy.
50 appearances.
Yeah, that's amazing.
Wait, now, hold on. Let me put this into perspective. How many games has he missed this season due to injury?
A good amount. I mean, this was his first appearance since October 19th because he got hurt against Ajax in the Champions League. And he's missed a decent amount of time this season. But that's kind of what makes him so incredible, right? It's not just is it 50 goals in 50 games, but he comes in and then immediately scores after a long layoff, right? It just seems like he's just such a freaking goal-scoring machine.
Have you seen the video of what happened after he scored?
Oh, yes.
So, Andy, have you seen this?
I have.
So, he is wearing the Dortmund away kit in black. He looks very ominous in this black kit, and he scores this goal, and he turns and he runs towards the corner flag, and he goes down on one knee, and he kind of does the finger gun at the crowd, and the camera goes from Allen doing the finger gun into the crowd, and there's this like middle-aged woman sitting there in Wolfsburg out, you know, regalia, here. And she does the old "Hey, up yours!" back at him.
Was he? I'm wondering if he was singling her out because she was mouthing off, or he was just doing that to the crowd in general.
Happened to be the only one there.
Hey, so I have a point to make about this year in Bundesliga so far, Tyler. There's good news and bad news. The good news is that it's not a one-horse race.
Right.
The bad news is that it's only a two-horse race, and Bayern is still in first. But it's close, at least, right?
It's close. It's close. Look, and that's all you want. And Bayern is in a state of unrest right now, which we can talk more about. And so, look, I think that it's a fun season to be following the Bundesliga. I think it's always fun to follow the Bundesliga. But the table at the top right now between Bayern and Dortmund is pretty tight at the moment. So that's an exciting thing as we continue to go throughout the season.
Yeah, what Tyler is referring to is, you know, I don't know if everybody knows this, but the way German football clubs are run is a little different. It's called 50+1, which helps require that the fan base has some level of ownership in all the clubs. And this week, Bayern kind of ran into a firestorm with their fan base.
They really did. They had an annual shareholders meeting, and scheduled to be discussed at this shareholders meeting was an agreement between Bayern Munich and Qatar Airways, which is set to expire in 2023. Bayern Munich, the club leadership, let's say, at Bayern Munich, like club president and people like that, want to renew that deal and want to continue that partnership. Fans are not super pumped about that. And I think this kind of gets back to that whole 50+1 thing, and I'm glad you brought that up, Peter, in that it's not just a thing that German clubs say that, oh, fans mean everything to us. It's actually kind of written into the laws of how German soccer works, is that the fans are an intrinsic part of the game. Whereas in England, yeah, the fans are important and we love having fans in the stands. But, you know, at the end of the day, it comes down to the team ownership, right? And you got your Stan Kroenkes and you have your Glazer families and all that sort of thing. In Germany, it's a lot different. You kind of have to make sure you're on the right side of your fans. And in this case, the fans made their voices very well heard at this shareholder meeting that kind of turned into a bit of a circus. They shut the meeting down early. They ended it. But people are pretty angry about this because of the human rights abuses and the various problems that Qatar has. And they believe, fans believe, that Bayern Munich is playing a part in helping, and the term is sports wash, the image of Qatar. And so that's kind of the big issue. And I think Bayern Munich's in a rough place here because they want to remain as one of the elite teams in the world, not just in Germany. And so they're looking at partnerships like this as a way to make money and keep up with the Premier League teams that have much more rich TV deals, right? Like the NBC deal that the Premier League just signed that pays them $2 billion over 6 years. That doesn't exist so much for the Bundesliga. So they're looking for other ways to make money. So a club like Bayern Munich is in a really interesting spot with this. Do you appease your fans who are really upset about this, or do you take the money and continue to stay amongst the elite clubs in the world?
We haven't checked with you in a while. And so Jesse Marsch got off to a rocky start early this year in the Bundesliga. Mm-hmm. He's starting to do a little bit better now in Champions League. Got a good result this week. And the club, Leipzig, seems to be moving up the table. And now he's within a stone's throw from top four, actually. You know, he's like 3 points away from top four. Is the sentiment, are the fans starting to warm up to Jesse Marsch, the newcomer, with the recent spate of results?
Yeah, I think so. And I think, you know, we talked about this a couple of weeks ago, but I think it was always going to be a rocky start for Marsch, given what the task was of moving on from Julian Nagelsmann and kind of switching the way that they play back to a more just kind of aggressive pressing, get forward at all costs style of play. And so I think it was always going to be rocky. And I think club leadership always kind of knew that. I think the fans at first were a little bit more frustrated, but you're right. A win tomorrow over Bayer Leverkusen and they would hop all the way up into a top four spot, depending on what Union Berlin does against Eintracht Frankfurt earlier tomorrow.
Our team.
Yes. The tickets own Union Berlin. Right. So they play Eintracht Frankfurt. RB Leipzig plays Bayer Leverkusen. Again, if Leipzig wins that game, they could potentially be up as high as fourth, maybe even, you know, fifth, something like that, by the end of the day tomorrow. And so things have turned around nicely for Jesse Marsch. It was always going to be tough for them in the Champions League also because they were drawn into a group with Manchester City and PSG. So advancing to the, you know, to the knockout rounds of the Champions League was always going to be a tall ask. But, you know, right now I think they're in position to be able to be one of the teams that would drop into the Europa League if they're able to, you know, continue doing well in the Champions League. So, I think things have turned around nicely for Jesse Marsh.
All right. So, and part of the reason why, Tyler, we have you on to talk Bundesliga is because of all the young Americans playing across the league over there in Germany. Just quickly, what's the Giovanni Reyna situation? What's his health situation? Chris Richard at Hoffenheim. Any particular American kid news that we need to know across the Bundesliga?
Now, the biggest thing is Gio Reyna, who doesn't look like he's going to be back in 2021. Will probably, I think they're targeting early 2022, hopefully, for him to come back from that hamstring injury, which it feels so weird because you remember he was playing in the qualifiers for the U.S. That's where he got hurt. And, he played out, I think, almost 90 minutes of one of the qualifying games. And they said, okay, he's going back to his club. He hurt his hamstring. And it all just seems so innocuous. But now he's going to end up being out for something 3 or 4 months total before he ever comes back. And I know he had a setback as well with that hamstring. And so that's kind of the biggest news as far as young Americans go in the Bundesliga. And I'm curious to see if more Americans do end up in the Bundesliga anytime soon, because that has been such a fertile ground for the U.S. recently, but not so much. Chris Richards came in as a substitute for Hoffenheim in their 6-3 win over Greuther Fürth earlier today.
And poor Greuther.
I know, they're just brutal. To give up 6 goals against Hoffenheim, that's rough. So
they're 0-1-12.
Yeah, that's pretty bad. Hey, Tyler, so the Reyna injury situation, I guess, is a bit worse than I was expecting to hear it was. So is this going to, perhaps jeopardize his ability to play in the February qualifiers? Well, end of January qualifier, I guess, right?
Yeah, end of January.
Yeah, so I would think yes, right?
Yeah, I mean, you have to be looking at the timetable and wondering whether or not he could actually get back. Again, this injury occurred against El Salvador on September 2nd. He suffered a setback that was reported in the first week of November. And so, his coach recently said, it's not foreseeable for me when he will be back in training with the team, but we hope that it'll happen before the end of this year. It's looking like that's probably not going to happen. And I know Borussia Dortmund's a great team and they have a lot of good players, but they could actually really use Giovanni Reyna. He's a quality player for them. And so the fact that he hasn't been available for so long is a bummer, not just for U.S. fans, but also for Borussia Dortmund fans. But yeah, much worse than I think any of us thought when we first heard, oh, hamstring injury.
Okay. The good Tyler Kern checking in to give us all the insight on the Bundesliga. Thank you, our friend. I hope you have a great evening of fun with your friends.
Thank you. Thank you. Thanks for having me on, guys.
Always. Check Tyler Kern out on the Twitter, of course. And when we come back, Andy and I are going to catch up in World Cup qualifying across the UEFA conference, Nick, or whatever we're calling it these days, here on the Kick Around. We probably should have put some time against this, but failed to think about it, unfortunately. Major League Soccer's playoffs are right in the meat of those things right now. I'm having a problem talking today, by the way. I apologize to everybody. It's the playoffs. I really wanted Oscar to win.
Yeah.
Orlando lost the other day. I was really, really rooting for those guys. I do wonder what his situation is in Orlando now with the new ownership group and everything. Mm-hmm. The reason why I bring it up is I know there is a section or a percentage of our listenership that just don't care about Major League Soccer, but I would tell you, Major League Soccer playoff games are always worth watching because they're one-off games, everything's on the line, and they're always nutty. Even the ones that are low scoring are wheels off nutty, like Seattle losing at home to Real Salt Lake. I know this is going to sound boring and awful, but it was anything but.
Yeah.
Real Salt Lake wins on penalty kicks.
Right. Advances on penalty
Advances
kicks.
In Seattle on penalty kicks.
Not technically
after going 120 minutes with an XG of zero, meaning not one shot attempt the entire game.
Not shots on goal, shots.
Shots. In an XG, expected goals stat for you nerds, of zero, and I don't think I've ever seen that. It is weird how the game plays out sometimes, but watching Seattle bash their head against the wall for 120 minutes as a Seattle non-fan was very entertaining. So that was good. So check all that stuff out. They're showing the games on ESPN and on Fox, and I think the Salt Lake Real Salt Lake game is tomorrow. New England, who's most likely to win it all, is on the 30th.
Yeah, that's the big question is, well, Bruce Arena, I mean, he really turned that team around in a snap. They've won Supporters Shield by a long shot. And now the question is, will they ride easy through the playoffs?
Yes. And just real quick on our local MLS team, I just want to throw this out here. It has been now almost 70 days since they fired their manager, Luchi Gonzalez. There is now less than 90 days till the new season starts, and they have yet to name a new manager.
Yeah, there's plenty of vacancies still open in MLS. I think part of it is you kind of want to see, and maybe you're talking to people involved in the playoffs right now. And you have to wait for those to... for that to play out.
Or are they?
Hmm. Or is there somebody else? By the way, Bob Bradley ended up in Toronto. So
Interesting note. So now Bob Bradley is going to be coaching his son, Michael, and will be working alongside his brother, Jeff, who is a former sports journalist up in New York City and is now the director of player communications at Toronto and has been for the last few years. So all the Bradley family is now up in Toronto.
This is going to be a challenge. Michael Bradley is a good player, a cornerstone of that team, but he's 36. And so there's going to be some tough decisions on the Bradley. Okay.
Yes. All right. So let's talk about, we're going to shift gears completely. We're going to go from fifth gear to reverse, because now we're going to talk about World Cup qualifying over in Europe, because we had a whole litany of teams qualify for Qatar. Many of the clubs, many of the nations that you think are going
to
go.
Yeah. So Europe had 10 groups, and each group winner qualified directly to the World Cup. The second place finishers then advanced to a playoff. And then to those 10 teams, they added the two teams from the Nations League tournament that had the highest placement that did not qualify for the World Cup.
Okay,
right?
So let's just do this. So out of the groups, Serbia qualified, Spain qualified, the Swiss, the French, Belgium, Denmark, the Dutch, and Croatia, England, and Germany.
Right. Those were all group winners.
Serbia is the one that seems like an outlier.
Well,
in that group.
It depends who each of those teams left behind to qualify directly. Serbia left Portugal and Ronaldo behind. So that was a little bit of a surprise. But I think you can also say that Switzerland beating Italy is a surprise. That Switzerland finished first, Italy second, and they won on goal difference. So they squeezed through, which means that Italy now has to advance. Remember, Italy did not qualify to the last World Cup.
2018.
And this is the same Italian team that won the European Championships. Yeah, the European Championships. And the one that early on in these qualifiers, remember I kept beating you up about how good they were, and they're like the best team in the world.
And then they fell apart.
So 10 teams have advanced, and they added to those teams the Czech Republic and Austria. And the teams, there's a host of teams that, 12 teams now in this playoff, and they've divided them in three groups of four. And they're going to have many tournaments. Those groups of four are going to have many tournaments. And the winner of each of those three groups advances directly. So we get three more European teams, right? Okay. Fairly straightforward. They drew lots.
My eyes are starting to cross, Andy.
So they drew lots.
I'm glazing over.
So what does this mean, big picture? This means that because Portugal and Italy were drawn into that same group, either Italy or Portugal advance to the World Cup.
And the other one doesn't.
But not both, and maybe neither, if another one of those teams in that group advance instead of them.
Who are the two other teams in that group?
In their group are
North Macedonia
and Turkey. So they should be able to get past those two, because they both play at home, Italy and Portugal. And then they meet.
And is it home and away matchups?
No,
is
it's one game. The seeds play at home. Italy, Northern Macedonia in Italy, Portugal in Turkey, and Portugal. If they both advance, it's Portugal at home.
Versus Italy.
If Italy advances. Yeah, right.
Wow.
Yeah, and so one of those. Now, on the good news side, for those that are fans of the Welsh, like you, or the Scots, like me, one of those teams has a really good chance of advancing to the World Cup, because they got drawn into the same group, and their group is rather weak. It has Ukraine and Austria, but more importantly, Scotland and Wales both host their first game. So their hosts, Scotland takes on Ukraine at home, Wales takes on Austria at home. If they both advance, they'll play that final, that group in Wales, and it's Wales, Scotland, to see who makes it to the World Cup.
It is kind of crummy because, you know, you would like a World Cup that has a Portugal and an Italy in it, right? But there is something feel-good about both the Scottish national team and the Welsh national team because they're, you know, mostly no-name or B-level players across whatever number of leagues around the world. But, man, they are fun to watch. Their supporters groups, their fans are awesome. Specifically, the Scottish fans are fantastic.
Yeah, they're great. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
The idea that both of them can't go kind of stinks, but this is such a weird way UEFA set this up this time. It's really there are people who have been watching this game for a really long time that still are confused about how or concerned or bothered or put out by how UEFA set up all the World Cup qualifying.
Yeah.
I don't know why it has to be so difficult.
With only the group winner advancing, they're tough, but most of the teams within the groups were kind of weak, and it came down to two or three teams for that top spot. The other group has Russia playing Poland, Sweden playing the Czech Republic. Like, that's a little bit of a toss-up. All four of those teams have a chance to advance onto the World Cup. Probably Sweden, I would say, is the favorite out of that group. But Poland with Lewandowski, you never know. But I go back to Italy, Portugal. And if it's Portugal and Italy in Lisbon, it would be such a huge story if either Portugal bows out or if Italy doesn't make it for two straight World Cups.
Yeah. You know, I was watching. I turned on the game when Italy was in Ireland playing Northern Ireland in the last group game, and all they had to do was score one goal because it was 0-0 late in the game, and all Italy had to do was score one goal against Northern Ireland.
Right. We're not very good.
Who are not very good.
Yeah.
And they couldn't pull it off.
Yeah.
And when the final whistle blew, man, the look on all the Italians' faces was really telling.
Yeah.
Because I think they understood they have now put themselves in a really weird spot. Because the idea of the Italians missing two World Cups in a row, which I don't think has ever happened.
No.
That
it's inconceivable.
Yes, it is completely. Like the United States bowing out and missing two World Cups in a row is totally probable in comparison.
Yeah, no. If there's a Argentina and Italy, when it's about soccer mad countries, you think England is soccer mad.
Oh, yeah.
Italy and Argentina are the two most soccer mad countries. And for Italy to miss two straight World Cups, it would be disastrous. Now, especially considering that this team is so good. You saw them in the Euros.
They were amazing. And it boggles my mind how this happens. I guess part of it's travel and the compression of the schedule, and the guys that play on that team are playing very strenuous games at a very high level, and they just, you know, they're worn out.
Yeah.
I don't know all the intricacies of why the Italian national team failed to end up at the top of their group. It just seems improbable. But again, World Cup qualifying is weird.
Yep.
No matter where you are, we talk about this a lot in CONCACAF, the idea that the United States can't beat X.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Italy can't go to Ireland and beat Northern Ireland. And that's not the only example. I mean, there are other teams. Portugal's a great example, mm-hmm. who couldn't pull it off in their deal too, because while that was going on, Portugal was struggling at home against Serbia.
Right, yeah.
Right? And they couldn't beat Serbia, and they ended up losing that game, and that's how they got themselves in this situation.
And you can't say that Italy going to Lisbon and having to play Portugal for the ticket to the World Cup with Portugal at home, with the World Cup on the line, Ronaldo's last World Cup on the line, is not going to be an extremely difficult game.
I mean, on paper, you'd think Italy should win that game no matter where it's played. But your point, Ronaldo doing Ronaldo things seems very, very probable. So I don't know, man. It's a weird situation. When do those next games? Those games start in March. So March 24th, I'm looking at here. And then the playoff games are at the end of the month on the 29th.
Yeah.
So they'll all happen in the
within
same
a week,
window.
Right, yeah.
So, that'll be a lot of fun to watch. At least good television.
Yeah, one more qualifier, two out of South America. We knew Brazil had already qualified, and this last window, Argentina now has qualified. So Brazil and Argentina are through as expected, and then it's very tight from second to, like, seventh.
How's your Chile doing?
They're middling. So they're struggling to find one of those spots. But it's, you know, it's South America is so tough.
Andy, it's okay. Because you know what? You'll have plenty of nationalities to root for. Right. Your Canada's going to qualify.
Canada, Scotland,
and maybe Scotland will be in
there.
Yeah,
that's right. Croatia's already there.
You can't afford to have like four or five teams to root for in a World Cup,
Croatia's already there also.
You really, you could probably just handle three teams to root for.
You're right, it'll be a little bit easier.
You'll be fine. All right, we're going to take a break. And when we come back, we'll get Daniel Robertson to talk about what in the world did Juve do to break the law? Serie A is next here on the Kick Around. Andy, in the breaks, I keep looking at this map Dan Crook made for everybody where he overlays all the London area clubs over the DFW area, and they're like where they would be if you just overlaid the maps. And I keep looking at this thinking about the fact that it appears that you would have to support Millwall.
It's, yeah, or Arsenal, right?
No, Arsenal is kind of Preston Hollow.
Okay, yeah, so I'm a little bit farther south.
Yeah, you now Millwall is, on the Dallas map, falls a little south of kind of in the Pleasant Grove area, but that appears to be the closest to you. Now, I and Corby, since we live in the same area together, would be I think Corby Spurs. And I would have to get Spurs season tickets.
Yeah, 'cause they're
and I'm
going
to talk him into like doing a bit where I dress as Pop and he wears a Tim Duncan jersey.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, that's
Spurs,
what I think.
That's your Spurs joke. Okay.
That's my Spurs joke.
Yeah.
It is also weird that West Dallas and Irving seems to have all the soccer because Chelsea, Fulham, Queens Park Rangers, Brentford is all in that little spot there. This is fascinating to see it in this perspective, isn't it?
I couldn't tell who this team is up here. Is this my team?
That's Slayton Orient.
Because I'm right there.
That's more kind of like, there's the lake.
Right.
There's the lake. I mean, they're kind of in that Northwest Highway.
And who is that?
That's Millwall.
Yeah, it's Millwall.
Yeah,
I'll be Millwall.
You're Millwall.
Yeah, I'll be Millwall.
It's pretty cool. Oak Cliff's got some clubs too, by the way. I guess Fulham and Chelsea more qualify for Oak Cliff than anything else, than Irving. It's a good map. Go check that out over on Twitter. At the Kick Around, Dan Crook made this map, and it's kind of interesting to put those kind of things into perspective. All right, it is time for us to catch up with our good friend Daniel Robertson on the Buyer's Barricade Ticket Hotline. Hello, Daniel. How are you today, sir?
Hey, guys. I am just kind of wondering what a Tottenham match at that park off of Garland Road and 635 would look like. At this point, probably rained out every other week.
It probably would, yes. My favorite part of the map is that Andy saw the map and he looked and he went, hey, there's nobody in Frisco.
Well, yeah, yeah.
Or Plano or McKinney, for that matter.
That's true, yes.
Yeah,
Plano or
County
McKinney. Collin County is unrepresented by the EFL and EPL, for sure. We have Daniel Robertson on all the time to talk all things Serie A because that young man at one point used to actually live and work for Juventus back in the day.
No.
And oh my gosh, Daniel, what have you done?
Wait, Daniel, before you say anything, be careful.
What you say here, sir. What you may say may be held against you in a court of Italian law, sir.
I'm sure there's still some taxes that I probably owe in Turin somewhere too. So yeah, I probably should be careful.
All right, so I'm goofing off yesterday. I opened the Twitter and I see a bunch of tweets about Juventus offices being raided by the police. What is going on with Juventus?
Yeah, so we got to take a little bit of step back here and explain a few things. First off, the Italian offices were raided. The Continenza offices across the street from the stadium in Turin were raided. And basically, what's going on right now is there's a scandal in Italian football based around the word plusvalenza. And if I were to explain that in any easy way, it would be like a capital gains. Okay, so all these transfer dealings right now, there's many Italian clubs under investigation for dozens and dozens of transfers that have happened over the last 3 years. And you could look at this and say, well, hey, I mean, PSG and Barcelona and Manchester City and all these teams have also been, you know, everyone does something shady. Why are Italian teams being raided by the police? And the difference is that Juventus and Napoli and a few other teams are publicly traded companies. And so if you are committing transfer issues, it's not only something that FIFA could turn an eye on, which they always do, of course, it's something that the authorities can get into. And so basically it is around the idea that Italian clubs are selling players at inflated costs. And so the biggest, most high-profile transfer in the case of Juventus, they sent Miralem Pjanic to Barcelona about a year and a half ago for Artur, the Brazilian midfielder. And basically they valued Pjanic at $60 million or 60 million euros, which no one would ever pay 60 million euros for Miralem Pjanic, a 31-year-old or 32-year-old Miralem Pjanic. Juventus got Artur for 72 million euros, but actually only 12 million euros changed hands. And so the capital gains and the amount of profit that teams make off of that really affects the books. And Juventus can claim a big profit off of this because the transfer incoming or the transfer fees going out are all lumped into one payment at that time, whereas the transfer fees that you pay are amortized over 4 years. And so basically it is a big accounting mess that stop me if you've heard this before. Italians are trying to cook the books on taxes.
Okay, so the rumor that it was an illegal hire from Texas a couple years ago, that's not true. It wasn't that they illegally employed somebody from Texas. Okay.
I just wish it was a 60 million euro fee. I would be more than happy to deal with that.
All right, so Daniel, just to reset everybody and reminding them that I believe Juventus has gotten in trouble before, and didn't they get relegated to Serie B at one point not too long ago?
Yes, and there's actually a fantastic documentary on Netflix right now called Bad Sport, which looks at a bunch of different sports scandals, and there's a one-hour special on the Juventus Calciopoli scandal, which I highly recommend everyone watches.
Okay.
It's on Netflix. Only an hour of your time, probably better than the Amazon series that just came out anyways. Yes, but that was more around influencing referees. That was not to do with anything related to taxes. And so it was more of a sporting issue rather than a legal issue in some ways. And there's another club wrapped up in this, Napoli, who they paid, quote unquote, 71 million euros for Victor Osimhen from Lille. And he's one of the best forwards in Serie A now. They sent four players to Lille as a part of this, valued, quotation marks, at 20 million euros. Those four players valued at 20 million euros have made one combined appearance in Ligue 1. And one of the players is playing in semi-pro. One of them is playing in Serie D now.
Oh, no.
It's going to get worse.
I have a question, though. Like, if you're getting you get a certain amount of money for a player, I mean, whatever the end net is, it is what it is. So how are they fudging?
Well, that's the big question right now. How do you determine, like any asset in life, it's worth what someone else will pay you for, right?
Right.
So I could sell a car and say it's worth $1,000, but if someone will give me $3,000 for it, that's what it's worth, you know?
Exactly.
But is it a function of paying the taxes on those values?
Yeah.
That's the issue, is what they're reporting on their year-end financials and those sorts of things. I'm not a accountant.
CPA, right.
Right.
Yeah, they're overinflating the price of what goes out so that they minimize the net,
right,
and pay less taxes. But at the end of the day, it is what it is. You get what you get, right, for your assets. So,
and that's why I think that it is something that is going to have trouble sticking as a legal issue until there are hard and fast laws where, again, like you said, how do you say what someone is worth? Because someone is worth what someone will pay you for them. So that's the big issue. Watch the space. Pavel Nedved is caught up in it. Andrea Agnelli is caught up in it. Even sporting director at Tottenham now, Fabio Paratici, is caught up in it because he was a sports director at Juventus at the time. So this is potentially going to get worse before it gets better.
All right. Daniel sent over a link to an article and explains a lot of this. And so we've tweeted that out over at the Kick Around. And I recommend on Daniel's advice that you read that. Now, Daniel, I don't want to turn this always into a Juve segment. I appreciate your connections to the club. But something else happened with Juve today that will probably have most of the people ones at least somewhat concerned, and that is the health status of one Weston McKennie.
Yeah, it's been a bad week for Juventus. 4-0 loss to Chelsea, their worst loss in over a decade on Tuesday. They drop a much bigger loss today because they had already qualified in Champions League group stage. Today, though, they lost 1-0 to Atalanta, who they're probably in direct competition with for that third or fourth Champions League spot now. And yes, about 20 minutes left to go in the match. Juve pushing for the equalizer. Weston, who is playing a really good game. I mean, he's basically a pinned-in starter at this point. He was challenging for a ball, made a long run. It was a long play. He you know, kind of was battling in the corner. It was tough to tell. Nothing really looked that bad. He made the play. He got the cross in, and then he kind of tried to run it off and went down. It didn't look from a Juventus perspective, missing a couple, 2 or 3 weeks is a big deal. From a national team perspective, obviously that's not such a big deal because we're still 2 months away from qualifiers. It did not on first glance look like a really major injury. It looked like some sort of a strain, just stretching for a ball at the end of a game. Hopefully it's just a week or two. It wasn't one of those like non-contact injuries that you really get worried about. He wasn't screaming out in pain or anything. Fingers crossed everything's okay, but of course we'll know more tomorrow or Monday on that one.
All right, so I also want to catch up everybody on the rest of Serie A. Any other storylines that we need to be following over the Italian league?
Well, I mean, look, and we've given a lot of kind of negative things, but actually the Serie A right now is an incredibly close title race. Napoli, Milan, Inter, all separated by 1 point at the top. Atalanta with the big win today. They're only 4 points behind Napoli at the top. Inter played Venezia this afternoon. Relatively routine 2-0 win. Busio played 90 minutes. Tessman played 15. The big hitters outside of Juventus are having very good seasons right now. And with the international break over for a while, this is when Serie A, no more Champions League games for a while. The next 6 weeks is absolutely huge in Serie A. It's where teams typically separate. It's very normal to see some clubs do well early in the season. A team like Milan does well and then they fade away. Let's see if they can keep things up through the holiday season. That's the big thing to watch. Napoli, Lazio tomorrow. That's going to be a huge game. 1:45 kickoff there. I would check that one out for sure. And we're just seeing goals flying in, guys. I mean, there are, as I mentioned, of the top four teams, they're all averaging over 2 goals scored a game. Napoli, Milan, Inter, Atalanta. Really, really good, entertaining title race. Definitely want to check it out.
Yeah, speaking of goals, we really did see that from the national team in the Euros. When they won the Euros, they were a high-scoring machine, which we're not used to seeing from the Italian national team. Now, they've run into a bit of a difficulty in qualifying into the World Cup, as you know, and they have to play that playoff. What, I guess, paint the scene in Italy if they happen to not qualify for a second World Cup in a row, which would be the first time ever.
Well, I was there when they didn't qualify the last time. I remember watching the game versus Sweden in a bar, and they needed a goal, and it ended 0-0 at the San Siro, and it was about a 3 month state of mourning for the country. So basically, in the last World Cup qualifying cycle, the last round, they had Switzerland at home, Northern Ireland away. They needed to win one of those games to qualify for the World Cup. They tied Switzerland, 0-0 tie at Northern Ireland, so they have to play in the playoff. If they beat North Macedonia, they'll probably play Portugal. And look, they just don't have a center forward. That's the issue. And when it's working because you've got Insigne on one side, Chiesa. It looks amazing. But when you need a goal and you're, trying, you just don't have that center forward right now that they've had in the past, the Luca Toni type player. That's what they're missing. And yeah, I mean, World Cup qualification now.
That Jorginho missed penalty kick could very well cost them the World Cup. And it's shocking, and I feel bad for him because he was a big part of why they won the Euro.
Yeah, no, and I mean he's a national hero in some ways, but yeah, it's probably going to come down to a one match winner take all. Yep. Italy versus Portugal. I mean, the neutral looks forward to it, of course, but it's just a shame one of those two teams isn't going to make it to Qatar.
All right, now Daniel, before we end. Andy and I's team of Italy is Fiorentina, who are sitting in seventh place. They've been playing pretty well. They're within very good reach of Roma and Lazio for the Europa League spot, for next season. But their leading scorer, Vlahovic, is actually the second leading scorer in Serie A with a whole bunch of goals. He's amazing, but they're likely to sell him in January. Where is Vlahovic going to end up playing next or later this season, do you think?
He's got to go to Juventus, and I hate to say this to you guys, but look, watch any Juventus game, and the thing they are missing is a center forward, a big, strong center forward. It's just a perfect fit, and Juventus has done a lot of business with Fiorentina. It's interesting. You see this in American sports sometimes. In Serie A, typically the same teams kind of do deals, and Juventus has signed Bernardeschi and Chiesa from Fiorentina. There's a lot of connections there.
Yeah.
The thing is, Vlahovic can just say, well, look, he's out of contract at the end of the year. I'm just not going to sign a new contract, and whatever you're going to pay in a transfer fee, why don't you just put a little bit of that into my new contract, right? It's just a match made in calcio heaven as a Juventus fan to get him to the rebuilding project in Turin, make him a centerpiece of it. That's what I'm hoping for, but you never know. A club like Tottenham with Paratici, who's going to be very familiar with him, if Tottenham's looking to sell Harry Kane this offseason, you would think that's a perfect little slot in right there for Harry Kane. Let's see what happens. I hope it's Juventus. Fingers crossed.
Well, he did score again today.
We need some good news.
Poor Juventus.
Juve. Your 98 titles.
Vlahovic did score for Viola today, by the way, Andy, and their 2-1 loss to Empoli. All right, Daniel Robinson, thank you so much for all your insight, keeping us posted on all things Serie A. Thank you, sir.
Thanks, guys.
All right, have a great weekend. All right, Andy, we have been through the ringer today, have we not, sir?
You know, every time we don't have a show for a while, there's so much to catch up on.
Yes, and we're all thrown off with all the timing issues, with the football stuff going on. Now, here's the thing. We're not on next weekend because I have a trip planned that I think I'm still going on, although I'm starting to wonder if COVID's going to change those plans. So we won't be on next weekend, but we will be back. And then we got a whole bunch of stuff, because don't forget, we got like a Boxing Day show when the compressed schedule of the Christmas holidays for the Premier League happen. We'll be there with everybody through all of that. We did get through a lot of stuff today, Andy, didn't we?
Yeah.
We did, very much so. All right, Andy, let's see. So what else do we got going on? Let's see. Can we get that pulled up in here? Can we pull this one up in here? Yeah, good. All right, very good. Thank you, sir.
That's where you press the button.
Yeah.
Well done. Good radio.
Yeah, not really. It's rusty.
Come on, it was.
Wonky.
Very
and
raw.
Rusty.
Raw and good.
No, it's okay. All right, so Andy, let's see. So we don't have Champions League games this week. There are Premier League games. Now, tomorrow
let's talk about
Chelsea Man U. Go ahead.
I need a solid from your guys.
They're missing Maguire and they're missing Varane. It's going to be a starting back two.
I need you to do me a solid, Peter.
Somebody told me today they thought Manchester was going to pull the upset tomorrow, but it's at Stamford Bridge. I think it's a clobber and is coming.
I'll be rooting for your boys.
Yeah, okay. Thanks, Andy. All right, thanks to the two Jacobs today. Thank you to Travis. And by the way, special thanks to Sam, who came downstairs and rescued us in some ways, so we appreciate that. P1s, we love and adore you. Get stuck in and win your 50s.